Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. So, I hope, like a lot of others that I've spoken to lately, we had our 12, 13, 14, 14 inches of snow and freezing weather for pretty much the whole month of January. Broke all kinds of records, had a first-time squall, which doesn't happen here, obviously, since it was the first time. Had that big snow. We beat a record from the late 1880s about a week ago for a lowest temperature. That's without the wind chill. And by golly, the last January has been a typical Midwest winter. And we're not over it yet, but some of us are feeling hopeful that spring will in fact come, like it comes each year, even though we've got a ways, because we're hitting around 50 the last couple of days. There's so much snow still on the ground, though. I don't think anyone will have a clean car for another month or so. Because as the temp goes up in the afternoon, it's melting on the streets and refreezing. But anyway, I hope you guys are having a great beginning of this new year. We're just about to flip the page, tomorrow to February already? Seems impossible that time is going so fast. Not quite sure what that's about. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your every Wednesday night host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org. How quickly our lives can change, right? In a flash. Excited about our guests tonight. They're, one of the things I'd like to say before I introduce her formally is that it's been kind of strange that Heather would pop up when she did. I had just watched a movie that I hadn't seen, my husband and I, called A Dog's Purpose. And just now on a different movie, really kind of a sick comedy, and it wasn't even about dogs, but the principle was the same, as something that happened to us about a decade and a half ago with one of our dogs. When he was in his 6-foot privacy fence, locked, gated yard, and a feral cat bigger than him climbed up the neighbor's tree, dropped in our yard. The dog did what he was supposed to do in his own yard. He defended his own yard. And this cat sliced him from stem to stern, injured him really badly, and it looked like he wasn't going to make it. And I remember carrying him, bleeding and torn, injured. He was brave. I was trying to be brave for him. But when I took him to the hospital and he was having surgery, I got a hold of the Humane Society, because this cat ran up our tree in the backyard, real high tree. And so we had 3 other dogs at the time, and I was scared of this monster cat up in the tree coming down and hurting anyone else. And when I called the Humane Society and they came out, they asked an odd question, I thought. They asked if the cat had scratched me. And I said, no, it just shredded my little 11-pound dachshund. And then they informed me that there was nothing they could do about it. I wanted them to shoot the cat with a tranquilizer to get it out of our yard, with 3 other dogs that have needs. You're going to have to let them out. And it was getting close to dusk, and I certainly wasn't going to let my other dogs out while this cat was up in the tree, so it was going to have to go. And they informed me that they couldn't help me because my dogs were property. And that was like a punch in the gut to me, because I've had dogs since I was a little kid, and I know the difference between two-legged spirits, people, but I also always believed in the spirit of my dogs, of which I've had many, and could feel and see what they were bringing to the table to enhance my life and direct me in how I was supposed to go. So to hear somebody from a organization called Humane Society call my dog property instead of the way I looked at it, I found very shocking. And all they were willing to do was put a trap out. Well, my God, a trap, for those of you who are familiar, you know, it's like a cage that they put food in and prop the entryway open, and the animal goes in and the door slams down and they're caged. Well, I had 3 dogs, okay? It was more likely one of my own 3 dogs would go in it than the cat. And so they were of no help at all. And, of course, I was hysterical because of my dog getting surgery. And he made it. It was a really tough recovery, but I want to get to the point and bring on our guest. Mario did wind up making it and living a long life, pretty arthritic in his older life, and again, took a long time to heal. But what we needed to do that night was just pray and open up our double gate, keep our dogs in, go in the house so that the cat would think it was safe to come down and get out, which took a couple hours, but eventually it happened. We locked our gate again, and that was that. But different people have different thoughts and different ways that they handle dogs. And tonight, our guest and I believe have very similar views in how we look at the power, the spiritual power of dogs. And it's not as property. And I'm going to leave it at that. But tonight my guest is Heather Lee Strom. You thought your dog was here just to be your loving support and joyful playmate. Bet your pup is potentially much more than that, according to Heather. Your pet could be the physical conduit for your canine spirit guide. In her groundbreaking book, Canine Spirit Guides, The Healing Power of Man's Best Friend, Heather Lee reveals that these unique spiritual energies are here to guide us on our journeys of healing, growth, wisdom, transformation, spiritual evolution, and ascendancy. And the ones that choose to enter your life, though your pet, are divinely matched to you to teach you what your soul is calling to learn. Heather Lee would only discover this for herself after having passed through decades of a deeply difficult life, beginning with a verbally abusive and emotionally absent father, then poverty, crippling accidents, a lot of loss, and more. Feared by sheer willful determination, pain, and repressed rage, she created three highly successful careers in dog training, physical therapy, and cycling. Heather Lee Strom shares how her caring canine companions came to her with specific gifts at specific times to move her toward healing and a joyful life. She has become the channel through which the canine spirit guides are bringing their messages and frequency of healing to all of us. I'm going to repeat the websites a couple of times, but those of you who are regulars know I always put them in my program notes. And if you're new here and you happen to be driving or sitting in your easy chair, not by a pen, just go to one of the many links posted across social media to braininjuryradio.com or to my own website in aflash.org. Find the link to the show, click on it, and you'll see the synopsis that I just read, and you will see heatherleestrom.com and caninespiritguides.com. And those are her two websites. Again, heatherleestrom.com and caninespiritguides.com. With that, I am going to bring on Heather.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Heather. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you were able to make it. I was talking to Heather for a moment, audience. The last thing, I had a different guest scheduled for tonight. As most of you know, my last Wednesday of each month co-host that I have joined me, Simon, and we'll all say a prayer for him, went through surgery and was supposed to be back and let me know the morning that Heather let me know, or I shot her a couple of dates. Anyway, she was going to have to change the date. I was sitting here working on booking shows. She was going to need to change her date next month. And then Simon got a hold of me and said he wasn't near ready to do a show for tonight. And so, tongue in cheek, I said to Heather, you wouldn't happen to be able to make it next week, would you, which is tonight? And she said she would. And I was very happy. Very happy, not only to have the slot filled, but because animals are, and I'm going to let her do most of the talking. I've already done a lot of talking, but I was an only child, and my best friend, my siblings, my favorite playmates from the time I was a kid to now, and I'm far from being a kid, dogs have always been a part of my life. And I'm interested in, you know, there's some things I know, but not to the extent Heather does, and there's some things that I'd like to know, because there's some people that get a breed, maybe one that, you know, their family had a few of, and then they wind up, you know, having a number of that breed. And I've done that too. I've had four little dachshunds in my life, but I've also had a shepherd mix, a teacup poodle, a Frenchie, Bug, part Boston, part Pug, Libby, that's who we have now, and Tino, who's a Chiweeny, part Chihuahua, part Dachshund. Tino and Libby is who we have now. So, I mean, really, a German Shepherd and a teacup poodle. There must be different energy coming out of each of those. And it's been interesting because it's not coming yet, but I also mentioned, and most of you already know, that we lost a couple of dogs in the last couple of years, and the last was back in June. Been thinking about, but not acting on, thinking about who might come and be a new person in the house. And I thought I knew breed-wise. I was positive I knew. And some weird complications that have happened, well, the way that we lost our last dog, for one, to confuse matters. And I just can't get a handle on it now. So I guess it's not time. Maybe it's time to spend more time with Libby and Tino, and this will be something we address later, but it's just been a weird feeling to not have a definitive feeling about what direction we'd like to be going. So in any case, I want to welcome Heather to the show, and I'm excited about your book. Again, it's Canine Spirit Guides. You can find it on Amazon. You can also find Breadcrumbs on her website, but I was looking at it on Amazon today. So your usual haunts and very reasonable. If you're an animal lover or you're curious about some of the things we talk about tonight, I think you'll really enjoy her book. So why don't we just start at the beginning, Heather, and talk about one thing that's a little different. I listened to a couple of your interviews, and interesting that you would land here at Brain Injury Radio, because the preponderance of our listeners are people who, including all of our hosts, are people who have experienced a brain injury in some fashion or another, or caregivers, and now there's a lot of medical professionals that frankly don't get a lot of good, they save our lives, and I don't minimize that at all, but they don't let us know the bag of rocks we're going to be carrying for an undetermined amount of time after our brain injury. There's really no guidance there. And so one of the things we do big here, and why I was really happy to have you come, is that most of us try to figure these things out hit and miss ourselves. We go through the doctor circuit. That ultimately leads us to the shrink, usually, you know, when a doctor can't find the right pill, because that seems to be the only treatment that is in the traditional medical model. What else can you do in the 15 minutes we get now, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So I usually say, if you weren't a little crazy before, I used to get real mad at that, but I had to develop a sense of humor. I've been doing this weekly for over 13 years, and now I say, if you weren't a little crazy before you got in the system, you will be when you get in the system, because it's confusing. And so most of us go out and try more holistic type things or unconventional, whether it's acupuncture, acupressure, EMDR, massage, myofascia, pain therapy, there's yoga, you know, a laundry list of many things, nutrition, supplements. I mean, all the things that we try on our own in desperation to try to find something that works to help us with the after effects. And so one of the things that's kind of obvious, and this is also ironic, Friday night, our host is a veteran, and he hadn't had a dog, but I think that I can share because he has on his show. You know, he was having some problems with, I'm not a doctor, I'm just going to make an observation, PTSD-related things, sleep issues, moody, some different things. Someone suggested that he get a service dog. And he did, I won't say reluctantly, but he didn't have an expectation and really didn't have experience with dogs in a healing, spiritual way. And it took almost no time at all when that dog arrived for him to say, just Friday night, that he couldn't imagine his life without that dog.
Aww.
And the relief that he's found. And that's what I thought. I thought, geez, if you didn't know it before, thank God, you know, that that happened, you know. And this is a German Shepherd, so it's a manly, military kind of dog, you know, that the kind of dog it would take, you know, to appeal, but with a gentle spirit, a calm spirit, which is what he needed to be able to sleep better and be more grounded. And so the dog presented exactly the way he needed it, and it worked exactly the way it was meant to. So why don't you start wherever you'd like to start, and I'll pick you up in between, because you know something about healing and the significance, the things that didn't work so well, but when you realize the significance of dogs in the process of healing and being spiritual beings, not property. Isn't that horrible to say? God,
no,
that just broke my heart to hear them say that.
That's a separation of law and humanity, right? I mean, that's a common flaw.
But they call themselves the Humane Society. I don't know.
But it is a government institution, so.
Yeah.
It's a government institution.
That did it. All right. I got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't expect them to interact on a humane level, right? Because it's the government. So, I don't even know it all. Yeah. And that's a shame, and that's part of where humanity is right now, and that's part of the reason why the canine spirit guides are announcing themselves, because humanity needs so much help at this moment. These spirit guides have been with us since the beginning of time, and they connect with us through our dogs, and now it's very critical that we know about them and that we know we can access the healing that they have to offer humanity. So that's the reason they're coming out now to help us. But let's start with the basics first. And a canine spirit guide, I want to be clear, is not your dog's spirit. It's not part of your dog's soul. It's separate from the actual dog itself. It's a healing entity that comes through your dog, that works with your dog, and that wishes to connect with you through your dog to assist you as a human on your spiritual path. So we also have our own, as humans, we have our own spirit guides. So those are separate from the canine spirit guides. So these are an added layer of assistance or of benefit, and they are very powerful. And this particular group that I work with from the first book, they're called the Core Four. They're four of the 50. They're the first four to come through to help humanity heal on a very deep level. And this is a level that we commonly resist growing this part of ourselves or healing this part of ourselves, because we expect it to be hard, or we don't want to see that part of ourselves, or we just don't want to do the work. And they're offering their services so that it to show us, number one, it's not hard, and number two, it can be quick and easy, and it doesn't have to be difficult or painful. That's just what we expect. That's kind of what we've been conditioned to expect on a growth process, like, the way we see it here on the earth plane is that recovery is hard and it takes time, and we have to understand it in order to actually find our way through it, make sense of it. You know, if you've ever tried to wrap your head around like a painful memory that you've ever had, like maybe from your childhood, it's hard sometimes to understand why that happened. And we don't really need to understand the why. We just need to be willing to heal from it. And it can be very, very quick, which is what they did with me when I wrote their book. So my book kind of is an example of what they can offer humanity. But there's so many conversations I would love to have with you and your audience, because I myself have had my own brain injury that I had to recover from, and the canine guides were there with me as I went through that whole process, in addition to everything else they do.
And how did you, what happened? I'm sure people are curious, just people might be anyway, but on a network like Brain Injury Radio, definitely people are curious as to what's happened to other people. Can you tell us a little bit about your brain injury?
I would love to. So mine isn't technically an injury per se, except on a certain level it is, and I'll explain that. So I had a brain tumor that went undiagnosed as a child, and you know, back in the 60s, we didn't have the technology to find that kind of stuff. We didn't have MRIs yet. So as a child, I had seizures, and they couldn't figure out why. So they just put me on medication to make it stop. Well, as my brain grew, I outgrew the tumor, and so I didn't have symptoms anymore until my brain stopped growing when I was 27. And I don't know if you guys know this, but your brain continues to grow and develop until you're 27. And then at that point, it's reached its maturity. So when my brain stopped growing and the tumor kept growing, then I started to have symptoms again. So it had to be removed in my late 20s. And, you know, I had a number of seizures, grand mal seizures, and then also what they call aphasic seizures, which were quite trippy, but I had several a day, and there was no way that I could exist that way for the rest of my life. There was no way. And to complicate matters, I was in the middle of physical therapy school, which is not easy to do, and the part of my brain that was affected was the left temporal lobe, which is just above the ear. And that's where we process math, language, and speech is right in the left temporal lobe. So I was having trouble keeping up in class a little bit, not terrible, but just a little bit more time to process than most people. So they decided that the tumor had to come out because I'd had a grand mal seizure in class one day. And this was a problem because in my program, I was getting ready to start my first full-time clinical experience where I was going to have to work in a hospital and care for patients as a student physical therapist. So the school was not going to let me go out on my clinical rotation unless I was medically stable. I had to make a decision and take action. And this story is in my book, and it's really fascinating because I did not have any health insurance because I was poor up until this point, and I could not afford health insurance. So until I got into physical therapy school, which required health insurance and also built it into the tuition, so that I could get it paid for through a loan, that's the only way I had health insurance. And it was very timely that I had the care that I would require for this brain tumor, which which made itself known during my coursework in physical therapy school. So that was miraculous that I had the ability to provide the care for myself at that moment. And then I was having brain surgery in the middle of physical therapy school, which is mind-boggling because PT school is incredibly hard.
And, yeah.
there was no time off in our program. Like, we didn't get summers off. We were in class 24/7, 7 days a week. I mean, we just had no time off. And except that there was only one break in the entire two-year program, and it was for 5 weeks in this 1 year, right after Christmas. It was for 5 weeks. And I managed to get my surgeon to put the surgery off until that break that I had. And this was all divine timing. And the surgery went well. I laid there in that hospital bed after the surgery, and it took me 3 days to realize that I could not read because there was a calendar at the end of my bed, and I had no idea what it was. I kept staring at it. I'm like, what is that? It was a calendar with the day on it, the month on it, the year on it. I had no idea what it was. And they would bring me my menus and ask me to select what I wanted to eat that day, and I didn't know what that was. So I never gave them an answer. And my friends would come with cards, and I couldn't read them. I just pretended I knew what they said and said thank you. But it took me, for some reason, it took me 3 days to realize that I couldn't read. And this is a big problem in physical therapy school. There's a lot of reading that has to happen.
Yeah.
So I was really scared at that point because then I had to go back to school in only 3 weeks' time and somehow make it work. So my book goes into a lot of detail about the strategies I tried to implement. Like you mentioned already, I got zero support from my doctor, from my insurance. When I went back to my surgeon and said, look, I can't read. And he said, yeah, that's sometimes a side effect. It'll go away. And I'm like,
yeah.
I kind of needed to know that, you know, before you did the surgery. So I suffered through it the best that I could. And what I discovered was that I could write, and through short-term memory, I would know what I wrote. So I could train myself to read again by writing and then reading it back to myself just through memory. So I managed to make it through physical therapy school by what I call reading backwards. So I would write it down and then coach myself into what it said and try and recognize it with my eyes. And then later on, it was really hard for me to understand the bigger words when I looked at them. So, gosh, if I was looking at a big word, like, well, let's take examination, for example, I would look at it and I would have this list of words in my head that it might be, that it could be. And I would try and fit it like a puzzle. I would try and fit the words that I needed to be that or that would make sense to be there to see if they fit, to see if it would work. And I would be like, oh, that works there. I bet that's that word. So it was what I called reading backwards. So it took me a long time to read stuff versus, you know, the normal speed that my classmates were going at. And this was really cumbersome in a work environment when I'm trying to review a patient's chart. It would take me forever to review a patient's history and go through their chart and make sense of all the big medical words, you know, because those are really big words. So I made it happen, though. I got through it, and it was only by the grace of God. And what I didn't understand until I wrote 30 years later, I did not understand that I was being assisted by these canine spirit guides. They were guiding me through every step of the way. And what was so fascinating about that surgery was that it was a predetermined exit point. I don't know if you and your audience have ever discussed exit point, but all of us have points in our life where we could exit and leave this earth plane and die. So it could be an accident. It could be an illness. It could be a surgery like this one. It could be a murder or any type of death. It's an option for us to exit and say, okay, we're done here. I've had enough. I'm leaving. So that surgery was an exit point for me because my life had been so hard up until that point, because that was kind of a midway point. I was 27, and it was a midway point for me because it was midway between birth and my activation, when I would be spiritually activated into my purpose. I didn't know that at the time, but so during that surgery, I actually left my body, and I saw myself leave my body, and I followed my spirit guide, and I went to my galactic council, and we had a meeting about my journey I was on and where I was at, and they reminded me. I didn't understand this part until I was writing the book, and the canine spirit guide showed it to me. But when I was meeting with that council, they were reminding me that I had a specific purpose here, and that's why I had chosen to come, and that I had chosen to have this really difficult life and this process in order to reach some really important milestones and goals for my soul's learning. And it would be even more time yet before I was able to be activated into my gifts and my skills to be able to achieve my mission. And so they reminded me of that, and they said, look, if it's really, really bad, you can come out now and you don't have to go back. Or you can keep going and just know it's still going to be more time before you'll be able to, you know, be who you're destined to be here. And I said, put me back in. I've got this. I'm going to do this. So I journeyed on, and it was even tough for a while. But that's, for me, that was a big learning when I discovered that when I wrote the book, because it only reinforces the fact that these really tough challenges we have in our life are there for a reason. They're there to teach us something. I call them a bookmark, because this is something that we set up before we incarnated that would trigger us to make a change in direction, or remember something that we had drifted away from, if it's your path or maybe a person you were designed to connect with. It's sort of like a reset point. So anytime I have, now that I know all this, anytime I have some sort of devastating, life-changing illness or occurrence in my life, it's always a very powerful message. And in this message is an opportunity for us to embrace it and understand it and utilize it to get us back on track or to reinforce what we need to know. It's a very powerful opportunity, and that's so hard to understand when you're in the midst of it all, when you're in the middle of the chaos. You know, it's so hard to see the good in it. And if you read my book, you'll understand the only way I could live through it, and the only way I could deal with it, because I was totally on my own. I had no support. I had no family, no friends. I didn't have the support of the doctors. I didn't have the support of the school. I mean, I was just doing the best I could to take care of me. And the only thing I could do was to keep looking forward. I could not afford to focus on what I couldn't do. The only thing I could focus on was what I needed to do. So anyone in my life who wanted to say, oh, poor you, or wanted to focus on, you know, the tragedy of what had happened, I wouldn't spend time with them. I wouldn't talk with them, because I had to focus all of my energy on the outcome. on where I needed to go. So I was very fastidious about that, and that is the only thing that got me through. The only thing that got me through. But I did manage to get through physical therapy school, and I graduated, and I passed the board exam, which I was not sure I was going to do, but I managed to do it.
Wow.
And I've had, you know, I've been a physical therapist for 30 years, so it was a challenge. And when I wrote the book, looking back on it like that, I'm like, wow, how did I survive that? How did I do it? But it's possible.
Well, it is.
And yeah, it's possible.
Well, I was just going to say, it's interesting that you, like, you're reading backwards. I talk about the four A's at the beginning. There was an awareness to you that you weren't going to be able to work at the same pace or in the same way that you had before.
Mm-hmm.
And you accepted that, but that caused you to shift your action to these compensatory strategies, in your case, reading
mm-hmm.
backwards, putting together the pieces of what you could do, what you couldn't do, and then matching up the skill set yourself, and then adapting. Obviously, you adapted to that and made it through the program. It might have, well, it was definitely more difficult, might have taken longer to get through the tasks to get to
mm-hmm.
the end point and graduate, but I can see why you didn't entertain. It takes a lot of energy to do that. I don't think people
mm-hmm.
who haven't been through it understand that sympathy or pity or whatever it is at that
mm-hmm.
moment isn't helpful
mm-hmm.
when someone, now it is if it's not a person who's got strong determination that I am going to do this, you know, then all of that energy is in the way because you need it
mm-hmm.
to come up with these strategies to get to your end goal, because less than that isn't acceptable at this point.
Right.
If ever, you know, if ever
right.
you're going to give it the try. But wow, that's really amazing. Congratulations that you were able to get through that, the whole
Thank
program.
You. Yeah. I cannot believe I did that, but yeah, I'm so thankful. Yes. Gratitude. When I wrote that part of the book, I was just in awe. Total gratitude.
Yeah. I can see why. Now, did these, you talked about it earlier, and I hadn't seen the picture at first. It's on your site. I don't think, I got your book cover on the scrolling pictures, by the way, for you
mm-hmm.
folks listening. If you click on the link and see the scrolling pictures, you'll see the book cover pictures of Heather and her dog. But there is a picture of the core four on your website, I'm thinking. I'm trying to remember.
Mm-hmm.
This is Brain Injury Radio. I won't make excuses, but was one a pug and one like a golden?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what they were. I remember a pug on the right and a golden on the left, and then I'm blank on the two others. But can you tell us a little bit about the core four and what they each brought to you as their primary message? I'm assuming the core
mm-hmm.
four is kind of a starting point.
Yes, very good. Yes, I would love to share more about them with you. So the book is about the core four, and these are the first four of the canine spirit guides to come through And they are here to help us do the really ugly, hard stuff that humans don't want to do. So they do the really serious, deeper work, addressing the core emotions or the core experiences that we need to release and heal from in order to allow our core souls to expand into higher consciousness. So these core four are, there's Anthea, she's the first one, and she is the golden retriever and the cheetah. And then we have Oscar, who is the lion and the black and tan coonhound. And then we have Oregon, she's on the cover. She is the black panther and the Basenji. And lastly, we have Eric, Daman Yararan Eric, and he is the creme de la creme, I call him, and he is the pug and the bald eagle. And they all have different purposes and work with different, focus on different parts of us. So Anthea, the golden retriever, and the cheetah helps to connect us to our divine joy and self-love. And this is probably a completely different level of joy or love that you've ever experienced, because it's not the type of emotion that we're used to feeling here on this earth plane. It's a much more higher frequency. And when she introduced me to it, it blew me away. She helps to clear the emotions and the trauma and the pain and the fear that's blocking your ability to receive this full joy and self-love. And she does this energetically, and it's a very beautiful process. She's a really nurturing, motherly entity, and she works with the majority of my people because this is a great place to start. And until we're able to absorb and understand and feel these divine energies, joy and love, we really aren't capable of moving forward. So Oscar is the second level, the second layer, and he is the lion and the black and tan coonhound. And he works on reconnecting us with our voice and our own courage and power. So he helps to eradicate the trauma and the fear that keeps us from speaking our truth or even knowing how to express ourselves. You know, a lot of us have, like me especially, you'll read about my traumatic childhood where I wasn't allowed to have any opinions or I wasn't allowed to have any voice. And he was right there with me the whole time with the dog I had during that childhood, holding my voice for me and providing my courage and my power because I couldn't hold it myself. Oregon is the third level, and she's the Basenji and the black and tan, or the Black Panther. And she is a much higher frequency than the first two, and she's a very elegant energy. She reminds me a lot of Lady Diana, just this beautiful, light, airy, and very distinctive. She has a certain sound to her, a certain voice that's really interesting. But what she does is she helps us to understand and to see that we're hiding behind a mask, that we use this mask to do two things. Number one, to portray a false part of us into the world that isn't real. It's based on fear. It's based on the part of us we don't want to show. We show the other part. So we use these masks to hide behind. And then also these masks, secondly, will prevent us from fully seeing ourselves. So she'll show you the mask that you are using, and these masks can be anywhere on your body or in your energetic field. They can be just on your face. They can be a full body mask. They can be actually behind your back, because some people use these masks as shields because they're used to being stabbed in the back. But she has shown me so many different types of masks. So that's what she'll do with you, is to show you exactly what mask you're utilizing. And then she helps you to dissolve and heal it so that you can finally reconnect with your true divine self. And she will introduce you to your soul. And I had never met my own soul until I worked with Oregon. And when I met my soul, I thought I was in the presence of God, because I did not think that my soul was that magnificent and that full of joy and peace and love. I had never experienced anything like it. And that's what she showed. That's what she connected me to, and she showed me. So she's a really powerful canine spirit guide. And then lastly, we have Eric. And he's the pug and the bald eagle, which is a very interesting combination. But it's very fitting. It's very fitting because what he does is he, once you get all the gunk cleared out of the way with the other guides, then he's free to show you every aspect of you. So his job title is that of past life integration, and he also provides you with your own intergalactic awareness. So he will share with you what you need to know about past lives and how they impact the life you're having now, maybe some unresolved issues that need to be cleared up in order to fully integrate them into this lifetime so that you can move forward from here. And also your intergalactic awareness. I mean, they refer to me as the galactic canine channel, and at first I didn't understand why, but that's because Eric has introduced me to my intergalactic self. So now I have this huge awareness of all the galaxies, all the planets, all the other races that are out there, and I'm able to utilize everything that they have to offer humanity. And he has opened this whole window for me, and he also helped me to untangle some ancestral patterning that I was locked into that I needed to dissolve so that I was no longer impaired by it. So he's incredibly powerful. And he, to me, when I was in his presence, it was a lot like the energy of Archangel Michael. It was incredibly powerful and soulful. And I write about this in my book because he was the last one that I actually met of all of the guides. He kind of waited till the very end, even though he gave me the words to write on the pages. Like, I didn't have any personal experience with the guide himself until after I even wrote the whole book. And then I finally met him. And then I had to go back in and write some more because now I had a different perspective. But it was just very interesting how I had loyally written the words I was given, the words I had channeled from him to write on the pages, not knowing at all what it meant. And then once I met him in person, spiritually, I went, oh my gosh, now I understand the words that I wrote. It was incredible. So they all have their own job titles and their own functions and their own healing to offer humanity. And they do this through the sessions that I provide, because they'll only work with me at the moment. I've always been their spokesperson and their caregiver. And this is something that, this is exactly what I was waiting for. I came here to share them with humanity, but I had to wait for the perfect time in order to birth this book out into the world and to announce them. So part of my purpose for being here was to wait for that perfect moment for humanity to be ready, for Earth to be ready, because it's part of the bigger picture. Their action with humanity is part of the much bigger picture of the Earth changing, the universe changing, and we're all beginning to come together as a collective consciousness. And in order to do that, we have to elevate ourselves to a higher frequency. And so they're here to help humanity do that.
So you had talked about, well, in retrospect, what did you realize when you began communicating with the canine spirit guide about the dogs in your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there was a lot that I realized. And number one, the dogs that were in my life were there for a reason. And they were they had specific purposes in my life. And as I wrote the book, that became really obvious. And that is in the book. But I could clearly see as I went back that guide working through that dog. And what you'll also realize in the book is that several of the dogs reincarnated several times in order to provide that guide more than one opportunity to help me with their specific gifts or job title. So, you know, of course, I was not aware of any of this that was happening because just like you and your listeners, I was oblivious to the concept that there was a spirit guide for my dog, right? I still wasn't even sure if dogs reincarnated, even though I suspected it. I just didn't have any proof, or I didn't know certainly for myself. But after writing this book, I'm like, oh yeah, here it is. I could see, I could connect all the dots. So that's the biggest thing that I realized, is that these dogs kept coming back in my life, and you could see the pattern and the purpose for each reincarnated dog, because that dog kept working with that canine spirit guide. And so a different dog would work with a different canine spirit guide, and then that dog would reincarnate several times as the same message for that canine spirit guide. So that's how the book is structured, because it's separated into sections for each canine spirit guide, just to sort of illustrate that fact. But the biggest epiphany was that everything that had happened in my life was for a reason, and it was a stepping stone to get me exactly and precisely to where I am right here, right now. When I had that perspective, I didn't resent anything that happened in my life. There was nothing that I would have traded for anything else other than the experience that I had, because had I not had every single difficult time or horrible person in my life, then I would have never been the person I am now. I would not have had the experiences or the motivation to become who I am today. So that was the biggest revelation in working with the canine spirit guides.
That's interesting, because I don't know if everyone would say that, but I look at how my thoughts process today and what I'm doing today, and, you know, people will ask, I can't say that I'd be, even if I could do handsprings still, you know, that I would be about going through the brain experience and some other things that have gone on in my life. But for where my placement is today, I can see, like you say, that there was a purpose for every one of those things, stepping stones, for me to be where I am today and to be able to, I don't know, intuit some of the answers or know what direction. That's why the stuck thing I'm having right now is perplexing to me, but because it's just when you think you got it figured out, you know, something comes up. So I guess there'll be another one of those reincarnated. But, you know, things like, again, we're talking about the dogs representing not the dog's spirit, but another spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Through the dog.
Guide, yeah.
Just wanted, right. I just wanted to clarify that for the audience. But, you know, I had some issues. I was just thinking about what you said, reflecting back. And, you know, loyalty, one of the things about, well, dogs and why they're a good example, it'll be a next question I'm going to ask you. But I had had problems with loyalty in relationships when I was younger, whether it was with men or whether it was with best friend gals. You know, you tend to tell them your secrets or share some of your innermost thoughts and feelings and think that it's going to stay between you, and others wind up finding out, you know, that kind of a thing, or whether it's the typical, I don't want to say typical, you know, male-female thing. I just wanted to distinguish loyalty over all, you know, the relationships. And what I mentioned to you earlier that I've had a real variety of breeds and sizes of dogs in my life, and I've never been abusive or anything like that to my dogs. But one of the things that each of them has represented is loyalty and service for me. And, you know, when you look at it that way, and you do know, because there are other people, dogs that are at the pound or just other circumstances where no matter how a dog is treated, it still exhibits the loyalty for the most part, and the service. And so that, I think, really, I was in a service industry before, but when I had to make change after my brain injury and things lined up really unexpectedly that I got here, because I wasn't expecting this, and wasn't expecting to do a number of the things that I do, they were all service-oriented, whether it's a couple civic groups that I'm in or doing the radio show, conversations that I have, you know, are service-oriented and loyal to my truth, which isn't always going to be someone else's truth, but that's not mine to deal with, is, I guess, the way I've looked at it. All I can do is I'm blessed if I find my truth and I can share that with someone else. They can take it or leave it. That's for them to take up with their spirit guides. I'm not that. I'm sharing, like I say in the beginning, I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and that's where I've gotten it. But that was just kind of interesting when I thought of the many forms of loyalty and the applications of that over younger years, and then the many different types and breeds of dogs that I've had, and they all have pulled out different parts of me, different lessons for me, but they all had service and loyalty. Every one of them had that. So that was consistent across the board. Other ones, you know, different things were pulled from different spirit guides. So that's interesting. It's just as you talk, I'm sorry, as you talk, yeah, just picking up on some of those things, but go ahead.
Well, what I'd like to highlight there, what you were saying, if you take that loyalty and service that you get from the canine and you apply that, or you imagine that same loyalty and service in all of humanity. So imagine if every human, every person had that same type of devotion, loyalty, service, unconditional love for each other. Imagine what the planet would be like.
It would be great,
it? You...
but how practical,
yeah,
do you find that? I mean, it's not looking like it right now. I can really relate to what you said about the time between this evolution for you and it taking a long time to get,
mm-hmm,
to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it came at a timely time.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But the world's kind of a mess right now. And
right.
I don't know if it's me aging and I'm noticing more, but it is truth, because I mean, I was conscious during most of the time, you know, during the past, and we've had incidents come up, you know, that were dividing people and political, you know, the root of, you know, division,
mm-hmm,
one,
yeah,
of the roots of divisiveness, and, you know,
and
organized religion has been, I'm a very spiritual person, and I'm not knocking anything anybody takes away that's a positive spiritual evolution out of their organized religion is a good thing, but more, I think every war, but if not every war, the majority of wars have started over religious/political divisiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's because the two are very interconnected, and you'll see that in history. But what my point,
yeah,
is that the canines are showing us, are demonstrating, are illustrating where humanity needs to go, what's possible, and what it would be like if we were to achieve it. And that's what they, you see, the canine on an intergalactic level is a much more, animals in general, in other dimensions, are much more spiritually advanced than humans are. So the animals, all animals on this planet, come here to play a role to teach us how to be more advanced than we are, if that makes sense. So the canine is demonstrating, you know, that's what you're, that's what you pick out when you interact with your dogs, is their loyalty and their unconditional love and the fact that they're always there for you. They're not judging you. They just provide you with what you need. That's what they're demonstrating for us to, so that we can see how incredible that would be if we would only interact with each other that way. And a lot of times what I see, and I did a podcast on this recently because the canine guides were not very happy about the conversations going on right now. But what's happening is there's a movement where people are up in arms about the dogs right now. And there's a good reason for that. About being more kind to the dogs, and that needs to apply to all animals, not just dogs. But so there's a movement to not use any training methods and just to let the dogs be the dogs and be free, and that's all appropriate. But what's not appropriate is the fact that the movement is is turning a lot of anger and judgment on those who may not understand at the same level as the people that are creating the movement, because what we have to understand as humans is that there really there needs to be a flow, there needs to be an opening, there needs to be an allowing. So some of us will get it sooner than others, such as I've gotten a lot of spiritual growth here really, really fast, but not everybody else is going to move at the same speed as me. But I'm not going to sit here at my level and say, you guys are stupid because you're not where I'm at. And so this is what is happening right now on this planet, is that some people see the value in the animals, especially the canines, and that they need to be treated better than they are, with more respect, and for the brilliant animals and the spiritual beings that they are. But in the same conversation, they're not treating the people the same way. Does that make sense? Am I explaining that clear enough?
Yeah, absolutely. I said this to my mom the other day, that I won't say what it was about, but that I was talking about two different topics and said that we treat our animals better in that regard than we treat other people.
Yeah. And so that's kind of their point, is that needs to happen with humanity in general, is that we need to embrace this kindness to one another, same as the dogs show us. We need to be able to show each other that. So it's not only about the canine-human interaction. They're showing us where they want us to go as a race, as humanity, with each other. So that's a very important message that's coming through right now from the canine spirit guides. And as we are able to heal ourselves, and the canine spirit guides make this very easy to do, it's an instant healing that they offer, as we're able to do that individually, we'll be able to see this and we'll be able to achieve it easily. But for right now, when we place judgment on other people just because they're not where we are, this is not an elevated frequency. This is not an ascended soul. This is not someone who has healed. There's still a lot of healing that needs to be done when someone is standing on that pedestal. So they want us to be aware of the fact that we still need to clear this energetic burden or resistance or undercurrent that's kind of keeping us from getting to that level. And some people think that they're there already, which is, it breaks my heart to see people announcing that they're an ascended soul, they've expanded their consciousness, let's go, and then they turn and snap at other people. That's a conflict right there. So that needs to be brought into balance, and that's what they're here to help us do. But I just thought it was beautiful the way you identified that in the canine, because that really is resonating with you, and that's where humanity needs to be. That's where we're trying to get to. So that was a beautiful example you provided.
I'd like to ask you about another one.
Sure.
And you can relate this to people too, because I have confusion. So one of our dogs, Tino, the Chiweenie, is 9, and he was the baby for his 9 years, still is the baby. And when Benny passed away, I don't know, 8 months later, whatever it was, I brought home another puppy. And Tino and the puppy for the first year, it's not like they were in bed and best friends, but they played nice and didn't have any apparent issues. Tino had never had aggression before. He did kind of like to covet. We've got a lot of toys, toy boxes, and the toys are everybody's, and then there's a small pile that Tino has claimed are his. They're just his.
Mm-hmm.
And with the other dogs, when there were four, they would walk by Tino and he'd kind of, if he was in his bed, hover down over his toys and just give the look, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
the other dogs would just walk away, meh, whatever, you know, walk away and not do anything. This new puppy, like I say, the two of them played really well together, got along fine together, and then had their alone time. When that puppy, and we brought him home at 10 weeks old, we had him, when he turned a year old, all of a sudden, Tino, I thought he had had a stroke or something. It was, he bared his teeth, his eyes glazed over, his body went rigid, and you thought he was going to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a 9-year-old dog who'd never had a hint of that behavior. Now,
mm-hmm.
another difference in Eddie, the new kid, is that he did not walk away and honor the boundaries that
mm-hmm.
Tino had put out to the other four who just walked away and there was not an issue. Eddie
mm-hmm.
wanted to push
mm-hmm.
that boundary. And it made Tino nuts. And that, you know, we tried, God, even a dog behavioralist, believe it or not, I was trying anything because I saw what was coming, and I didn't want it to happen, obviously. But one night they were out playing normally. I'll chase you, you chase me. And
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden I heard that wicked sound coming out of Tino.
The Cujo.
And yeah. Yeah.
It's like a Cujo, yeah.
But the thing was, Eddie not only, you know, continued to push boundaries, but now he was growling back. So there
yeah.
was this escalation going on. And I got up, we were outside, my husband and I were on the deck, they were in the yard. When I heard the noise, I got up to go down there, and they did get in a fight. Now, in all my life, and I am not a spring chicken, and all those dogs, there has never, ever, ever been anything like that before, ever. And they, when they got into this fight, they rolled under the deck and the clearance is too low to get them, to have gotten them. So we had to let it resolve and them to walk out. And Eddie, the newer one, was fine. Tino got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Very lucky, blessed that he didn't get his eye put out, but his eyebrow area got torn about halfway over, and then a little puncture by the side of his nose. And I didn't know what to do about that. We had tried in the 2 weeks before, 2-3 weeks before is about when that started, coming up on his one-year-old birthday, and that was when Eddie graduated from ignoring boundaries to his, you know, starting to growl back, really pushing it. Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, what I felt I needed to do, I didn't want to put him in the system or anything like that. There wasn't, it was really heartbreaking because I told you about a couple other things that happened, you know, in the months and year before that. But I really felt like Eddie was going to have a new home because, I mean, that was a red flag. Tino's eye could have got put out.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried everything we knew how to do. Eddie did get a very good new home rapidly. I happened to got him from a breeder and met a young lady who got one of Eddie's brothers. And I got a hold of her on Facebook that night. We had friended each other and were watching each other's boys grow up from the time they were puppies. And I got a hold of her just in tears and told her what happened and what I felt I needed to do. And she, God, she was an angel. She was just, and this is someone I never met in person, but she's the one who made a phone call and found Eddie the perfect home. And, you know, I thought about it in retrospect, and I called it dog aggression. This was a new vet, by the way. In the middle of everything else I told you happened, our 40-year vet passed away.
Oh, no.
And I relied on him so much. In fact, he went back so far, he was even longer than that. When I lived at home and we had a dog, he was our vet. And then he was my vet through all of the dogs that we had had. And he was going to retire, and we were his last appointment. He got up that morning, his wife told me this later, that he got up that morning and he said he had an appointment with us and that we were going to be his last appointment. And he had talked about retirement in the past, but he even tried retiring once and it lasted 2 weeks. He couldn't pull himself away from the canine spirits. I mean, he was just
there
with it. You know, that's who he was there to serve. But he got home after tending to us that day, and everything was fine. Eddie got his last one-year-old shots, and they got their stuff for summer. And so I couldn't ask the person I had relied on so heavily, because at that point I didn't know he died. His voice message was full. And I thought, that's weird. You know, I couldn't get through to him, you know. I wound up leaving a note in their door and went and found another vet. I was desperate. Well, and Tino needed to be fixed. And his wife told me that when he got home that day, he went to get a bowl of ice cream, and when he was coming down the stairs, he slipped and fell and broke his hip. He was in rehab for a couple weeks, and he died.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about an exit point.
I know. Mm-hmm. And so this is going on with us and Eddie, and I'm talking to a strange vet, and I used the verbiage dog aggression, because aggression is really what it felt like Tino was putting off. But what I couldn't wrap my head around was, you don't just turn that way after 9 years. You know, I mean, I don't think you do turn that way after 9 years. And I realized that, well, a couple things. Tino weighs 11 pounds, small, and Eddie was supposed to be topping off about 10, 12 pounds. And Eddie weighed 17 pounds at a year. So he got a lot bigger than he was supposed to. And when they would play, and, you know, I'll chase you, you chase me thing, I think when he ran over him, he probably hurt Tino. And the fact that Tino was trying to put down boundaries and Eddie wasn't honoring the boundaries, whether it was playing outside or with those toys inside, I don't think it was aggression. I think it was fear and trying to put down boundaries, because he was used to four other dogs that responded to those boundaries. And this one didn't. And it scared him and caused what even I took as an, you know, an aggressive posture. It was an aggressive posture, but, you know, again, I don't think
defensive.
That it was. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And I realized that in retrospect, I mean, Eddie was gone, but I don't think that would have made any difference in how the cards were going to play out. But we've never had to do that before. I mean, this a year is a substantial amount of time to fall in love with your what that dog is bringing to the table, you know, for both me and my husband spiritually, and to have to let him go. And we had been through a process of having to let go. Bigger just months before. But I don't know, that that's still hurtful, even figuring that out, that I don't know. And maybe I think that's part of the problem with looking at the future, and then I just stop, because I don't ever want that to happen again, you know, and I don't know how that would be avoided. So with people, I guess I was just going to have one more sentence, and that's, you know, that there's one thing, and I'm not familiar with the group of just letting the dogs be who they are. Generally, that's what we do. You know, we've got a whole neighborhood of people that are out walking their dogs every day. It's like the freeway of people walking their dogs, which is a great thing, but we've always had a, you know, half acre, three quarter acre yard with a six foot privacy fence with a lock on it and a doggy door, and they've been free. Our dog has pretty much been free to be, you know, whoever they are that way. And there's all those breeds I told you about, and all the never that problem before. And I think you know, people do try to put down boundaries, and some of what is going on is not only the, you know, political, religious, but you were taught, you actually alluded to it when you said you wouldn't judge or compare someone who's not at the same place that you are. You know, mm-hmm. people do put some boundaries out there, even that spatial thing, you know, where you don't feel comfortable mm-hmm. if somebody walks up and, you know, they don't have a little distance between you, especially mm-hmm. after COVID, you know, for
yeah.
those years, you know, just stand back a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. From that age-old spatial thing, comfort level, to putting out boundaries of what makes you feel comfortable and safe. Mm-hmm. That's big, safe. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things a lot of people are having trouble with right now, is feeling safe, because a lot of the things that are going on, you know, in our country right now were somewhat isolated in where they were going on, or there were certain places you could count on being the dangerous part of town you don't want to drive through or whatever, just an example. But now mm-hmm. things are happening everywhere, and there's mm-hmm. not places you can count on like you could back in the old days when we all left our doors unlocked and kids could ride their bikes wherever they, you know, wanted mm-hmm. within reason around the neighborhood and all that. Things have changed so much from that the element of safety and putting down reasonable boundaries with people, I think, are making a lot of people reactionary, defensive, as what happened with Tino. But in any case,
did you see how you just explained it all right there? Do you see the beauty of what you just said?
Well, I understand it, but it.
So, okay, let me help you.
It hurts when you can't fix it.
Yeah, but there was really nothing wrong there. It was just a message. It was an illustration, basically. So when you're dealing with the dogs, you have two different concepts that are flowing with the dogs. One is a message for you. So whatever's happening with the dog, whatever the dog is doing or feeling, is a message for you. It's a reflection for you to perceive and understand and take action on. The other part is the dog, is just the dog being the dog, okay? So there's a magical, mystical side, spiritual side that brings us a lot of insight information into us, about us. And then there's the physical side that's just an animal. It's just a dog behaving like a dog. So there's two things you have to consider. And while you were talking, I was scribbling because the canine guides were just sending all these messages for you. So let's look at the dog first, the dog part, the physical part. You've got two dogs that are demonstrating two different messages. One is, I don't feel safe and I have to defend myself and I have to lay boundaries. And the other one is pushing the limit, pushing those boundaries, testing those boundaries. And also a little bit oblivious to the fact that there are any boundaries, okay? And that's partly because of his age. You know, he's a younger dog. He doesn't understand that there are rules. So there's some very definite dog things happening here. And, you know, I've had so many years as a dog trainer, and I've raised so many dogs, and as a professional breeder and trainer, you know, I always started my puppies out at a very young age with some basic concepts and principles. And when we don't provide these for the dogs, it's not real clear for them, the expectations for them to interact with other dogs and with people. And so there becomes a lot of confusion here. for me, I always want to be clear with the dogs what's allowed and what's not allowed, mostly for safety's sake. So I don't ever, when my dogs play with each other, they're always playing in respect to the rules that I've placed for the pack. And the number one rule is you're not allowed to discipline each other. I'm the pack leader. I will discipline as I see it's needed. So if a dog gets injured like that, what the dog would do instead of taking action on it and defending themselves, they would come to me and I would take action if necessary. So my pack all knew to do this. This was the rule. And so that would prevent any of the fighting that you were describing there. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that with their pack. And so there is that opportunity for the squabble, because then the dogs are interacting as dogs do within their own rules and their own pack. And so as humans, we become powerless to intervene because we haven't established that rule, we'll say, that setup. Okay. So that's what I'm seeing there on the physical level, is that, and that's you feeling powerless, and that's important for you. That's a message, right? Plus I'm seeing that this is a cycle, that whole period you went through was a huge cycle of purging for you. So if you look at it from a distance now and you see everything you were going through, there are a lot of people and animals leaving your life, and it was a very systematic purging. That's okay. That means that you're going through an energetic shift. You're lightening your load in order to allow you to elevate your frequency. So if you see it in that perspective, it's not quite so sad. It becomes more of a opportunity for growth for you, which is hard to see in the moment, but through all the stories I've heard you say revolving around this, that's what I'm seeing and hearing. Now let's get to the energetic portion of the dog, which is a lot of fun, because, and this, I've got to write a new book on this because, what's the word?
Glad to help.
Yeah, I can't remember the word I'm thinking of, but so what they were telling me while you were talking was there were some messages that the dogs were trying to convey to you through that experience. And one thing the guys asked me was there any point there within that period that the dogs were doing this with each other that you felt the need to challenge a boundary in your life? Was there something in your life that you were pushing up against, that you were butting your head against, or you were feeling wasn't right and you needed to do something about it? That they were demonstrating that you needed to challenge the boundaries. The younger dog was demonstrating that message to you. So I don't know if you can remember anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Oh,
and
I
the other message.
Can.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what the younger dog was trying to convey to you, was demonstrating that to you. There is a time in our life where we do need to challenge the boundaries, because if we never step out of those boundaries, we don't grow. So sometimes it is up to us to challenge them. And that's what the dogs will encourage us to do. So you have this younger buck coming in and he says, hey, I don't agree with these rules. I'm going to test them. And so he's encouraging you to do that as well. And then we have a couple other issues that they wanted me to talk to you about. The older dog, the coveting your possessions. And then I hear not spending money. So he's demonstrating your desire to covet your possessions. And my question to you was, is there something going on in your life at that time where you were coveting your possessions? And it could be like you didn't want to spend money, or you didn't want to share something with somebody, or it could even be like you didn't want to share your affection or your love because maybe someone didn't deserve it. But there was a message there around the coveting that he was trying to convey to you.
I'll have to think about that. The first one was a lot easier.
Okay. And then the last one was expression, around expression. You know, Oscar does a lot about helping us express ourselves. So you were very uncomfortable with how the older dog was expressing himself. It sort of lit you up and made you uncomfortable. And this is also an invitation for you to learn to become more comfortable expressing yourself without overdoing it. So there's a balance. You know, as we learn to express our feelings or our wishes or our views, there's a balance in how we do that so that we're not necessarily forcing ourselves on someone else, so without overdoing it.
Yeah.
So that was a message, a secondary message from him.
Yeah, we don't shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I'll have to talk to you sometime off air. I appreciate all of that input, and I know what a lot of it is about. I will have to learn the trick. I did the basic sit, stay, kinder pup stuff, but you know, like I said, it had never led. Apparently it was time for those messages to come my way, and the way that they did, that's why it didn't happen through 10 other dogs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the
right.
whole rest of my life. But I will have to get over my fear of that happening in the future. You know, I don't want to have to let, I guess you're continually having to let people go, just not that way, you know.
Well, there's going to be a lot of transitions in life, and the more we see them as that, the less difficult they are. So we don't want to be afraid to live. You know, just because there might be a transition, it's always going to happen. So,
no,
yet,
I just want to know the trick. Yeah, I will read your book for sure. Hopefully it'll be in there. I just want to know, like I said, maybe off air sometime, what the trick is that would make them come to you before they dealt with it
each
other.
That's not obedience. That's not something you'll learn in obedience class. That's completely separate. That's more of a leadership education, and it has a lot to do with your energy and how you conduct yourself with the animals and what your expectations are with them. So I can give you an example of that if you have time.
Sure.
I was on a walk with my corgi today out in a free space where it's a fenced in area where the dogs can all run. And there's a trail on that. We were out walking together, and this young lab mix puppy came up with his family. He came pouncing at us. And my dog is very calm for a corgi. She's incredibly calm and very polite, appropriate with other dogs. And she doesn't like being forced upon. So this young dog was so excited to see her. He came pouncing at her like Tigger, and she doesn't like it. So she instantly surrendered and made herself smaller and said, please don't eat me, you know. And the dog had a lot of energy, a lot. I think his owner said he was 2 years old, but he really had like a 6-month-old energy and just was bouncing all over the place. So I was talking with the owner, and eventually the dog came over to me and stood against me, touching my legs. And so I leaned over and I just touched him. And as I touched him and we connected, he completely calmed down. He almost went into a trance because my energy is very calm and settled. And none of my dogs, even though I raised the most hyper breed on the planet, the Belgian Malinois, none of them were like that. because that's the energy I share with them, is calm energy. And so he almost fell asleep just standing there. He was so calm. And I pointed it out to his owner, and he was like, wow, he's never that still. And that's the effect I would have on the dogs when they would come in for training or when they would come in for a private lesson with their family. The moment I took the leash, the dogs instantly just calmed and they got very focused and they looked at me like, what would you like for me to do? As you come into your presence and your power, like Oscar likes to help us do, you realize that it's not in the actions that you take necessarily, it's in the energy that you share. So it's not the obedience classes you go to, it's the obedience that you or the energy that you share with the animals. And once you're able to understand this,
that was the least calm time in my life. So right when you said
it, and you were probably really stressed out with everything that was going on and feeling completely out of control anyway, right? Yeah. So they were demonstrating that energy to you.
Yeah, I knew it the minute you said it. That is the most chaotic,
so the
chaotic,
challenge in life,
upsetting time.
Yeah. The challenge for us in life is to get through that chaos with the calm, right? So the more you can stay calm in the chaos, and that's what the dogs were teaching you. If you had interacted with that entire scenario without the panic, because they're hurting each other, right? It's hard to do that. But just to be calm and just say, nope, I don't accept this. I need you guys to work it out. And not jumping on their bandwagon, right? Sharing instead the energy you want them to reflect back to you. That's the key when it comes to the animals. And that would be beautiful if we could do that with each other, with humanity, right? That would be beautiful.
It absolutely would. What I'd like to do, because I want there to be enough time, the show on demand plays in its entirety. Anybody, we've got about 7 minutes left, but it might take us about 10 or 15. If you want to dial in to 424-243-9540 now, 424-243-9540. You can hear the last few minutes of the show live, or as I said, on demand, it will just go continuously without any break. But I want there to be time for you to tell about, and I appreciate the time that you've spent tonight, but to talk about the services that you offer. I had talked about your websites earlier, and, you know, I want to repeat the name of the book again. It's Canine Spirit Guides, and I saw that you can find that on Amazon, and also in the program notes are two different websites, Heather LeeStrom.com and CanineSpiritGuides.com. But I noticed when I looked today, there is a number of services that Heather provides. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that so people can know what to expect? Because I'm sure if they've gleaned anything, thank you for what you passed on to me about my situation. If they've got one going on, then your services, they'll see not only reading the book, but some other ways that you have to help. And then any closing comments that you might have.
Okay, sure. So I work with people, not dogs, but and the canine spirit guides will work with anybody, not just people who have dogs. So that's important to realize. But people come to me when they're ready to make life changes. They're ready to understand what's blocking them from getting where they want to go in this world, or maybe just in understanding who they are on a soul level. And I do private sessions with my clients and with the canine spirit guides, and these are 90-minute virtual sessions where I will share with you the wisdom of the canine spirit guide that wishes to work with you, and they'll tell you many different things. It just depends on what you need at that moment. So it could be anything about your life, about your journey here on this earth plane, people in your life, dogs in your life, maybe some past life information, what your mission is here, beliefs that you might have that are getting in your way, or trauma that you don't even realize is affecting you and keeping you from realizing your true potential. So once I deliver that message, then that canine spirit guide offers a very deep healing session right away if that's what you wish to receive. And it's a very beautiful session. It's deep energetic work for those who are ready to completely unburden themselves and move forward and confidently on their path. So we get a lot done in 90 minutes. And then sometimes people like to continue that journey and that growth. And so I have a mentoring program that lasts 3 months, and we meet every other week again for 90 minutes doing a very similar session. There's also more mentoring involved and the more of a real-life application. I answer all your questions, and we kind of integrate this growth and this healing into your life. So that's a really intense program that will most likely take you through working with all four of the core four spirit guides. Also, I have some other opportunities for you. I have a mini meditation program that I offer on my website where you can learn to meditate, which is the key skill that I had to develop in order to heal myself with these canine spirit guides. So if you're interested in learning how to do that, then this is the first place to start, and you can get that on my website. There is also a free work or handbook on my site, 6 signs that the canine spirit guides are working with you through your dog that you can download. And there's a beautiful free meditation from Anthea, one of the canine spirit guides, that's a healing meditation that you can download if you wish and use it on your own phone. And it's just a really incredible healing opportunity, even for people who don't meditate. Give it a shot and see what you think about it. Work with it for a few weeks and see how it will shift you and what it will do for you. And I also have my own podcast that I do on YouTube where I will channel in messages from the canine spirit guides, and then they will offer a healing opportunity, a virtual healing session for the group, for whoever's listening to the podcast, around that topic. So we've had some really incredible topics over the past weeks. And I did mention one of them that I did recently about the dog community. But there's been some incredible subjects come up that are really mind-blowing. And so they always offer energetic shift sessions around those messages, which are really powerful. So check that out. That's free. That's on my YouTube channel, which you can find from my website. But it's Heather_Lee_Strom. And I think that's about it. That covers it, I think. Oh, no, I forgot. I have a workshop coming up, a half-day workshop where we're going to work with Anthea and Oscar, and that's coming up in March. So you can find that information and get registered on my website as well.
That's what I was thinking, and I'm glad that you mentioned the YouTube. I did watch a couple of those and scanned through them. I'm going to go back and find the dog group one now, though.
Yeah.
Now that we've talked about it, I want to find that one. That's not the one or two that I watched, and then I scanned through the others. But I remember commenting to my husband, gosh, she's got a lot of them on here.
Yeah.
So you've got I commend you on your very organized YouTube channel.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's great. And congratulations on your book and all of the things that you've accomplished through your challenges and your brain surgery. And it really is incredible that you got through PT school and, you know, practiced that. And then at what point, just last question, since we're in overtime now for just a minute, what part in transitioning from being a, you know, a full-time PT, let's say, and staying on that side of the fence and getting into the spirit work. at what point did that come? And you probably get what question I'm asking, because that's a little different from the traditional medical model to moving into spiritual healing work. Were you always a spiritual person? And then where did that shift or hand in hand come in for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've always known that I was spiritual, but I was afraid of it. So because the only spiritual people I knew were kind of spacey and airhead, and I'm not like that. I'm very organized, like you said about my Facebook, my YouTube page. I'm methodical. And I respect time and space. So the spiritual people that I knew were not anything like that. So I didn't want to be like that. So I resisted being spiritual. Of course, now I realize that there are more spiritual people that are like me these days. So I was thankful to see that. But I resisted it for a long time because I didn't want to be different. I didn't want to stick out. I didn't want to be a weirdo, and I was trying to fit into this medical model, which I really didn't fit into at all. So I forced myself into it until the time came when I was given the task of writing this book. And that's when my spirituality just exploded. My skills just came, just leapt out of me. They just leapt out of me. I had no control over them, and they just showed themselves to me. And at that point, I realized I couldn't go back to the medical model. There was no way, not with the new tools that I had access to, the new knowledge I had access to, and with now being able to address issues with the physical body by using the healing that the canine spirit guides have to offer, that I could no longer only address the physical body. So I needed to also to go deeper into the spiritual body, because most of the patients that I had been working with, I knew that their long-time chronic issues were not physical. I could tell that they were spiritual. I just had no way at that point of actually doing anything about it. So now I had this new tool through my awakening. Now I could see it, and I could actually effectively work spiritually with these people. There was no way I could go back to just treating the physical body. So once the book was released, the canine spirit guides actually shared with me that I was to start working with people with the methods that they had used on me for my healing and my awakening, that I was going to share that, the offerings of the canine spirit guides with clients. And I was blown away because at that point I wasn't doing anything energetic or spiritual with my clients. So it was a rather sudden, abrupt about face. And I just leapt into it. I've closed my physical therapy doors, and I'm walking away from my license. And I'm going to be doing only, and at this point I'm doing only spiritual energetic healing. So I just followed my guidance and followed my intuition, and I'm trusting it completely, and it's been an incredible experience, absolutely incredible.
Well, I think that's exactly the right answer. There's a lot of generic PTs. There's not
yeah.
very many people that are into spiritual healing, which, you know, it really comes down to if you heal that spiritual connection, but it's harder to get when you're working indirectly, like with PT alone in the traditional medical model. So to have that help to tie spirituality into healing, I think is really invaluable. So thank you for answering that question. Well, I want to thank you for being here tonight. Our guest has been Heather Lee Strom, and make sure to check out those websites that are in the program notes and to check out the YouTube channel. She's got guides to the YouTube channel and the seminar coming up and the private sessions on her website. So everything we talked about is all laid out there. And I usually play a song on my way out, and it was interesting. I had a regular listener, Alan Kitto, who talked about a calm spirit. He came, suffered from a brain injury, and he was here every week listening for years when I first started. And one night, excuse me, I'm getting a frog into the night, I guess. he talked about a dream he had, and I don't know that this is relevant or not, but Alan was Native American, and he talked about a dream that he had. He said it to everybody on the air. And almost a year later to the day it happened, and it was an accident that was going to result in his death.
Oh, wow.
And I've got the show of it where he talks about the details. And one night I was watching the news about a year later, and that exact thing played out. But the reason I bring that up is Alan attracted dogs. I think he had 4 or 5. Wigwag was one of his favorites. This mm-hmm. guy was so mellow, had the sweetest spirit. Also cats and any other animal that was in the neighborhood. It was at Alan's store, but that part is a pleasant memory, and there's a lot of people, regular listeners here, who remember Alan because he was so frequently here. So he's got a powerful message in his simple song too on the way out, but I want to thank you so much for spending your time and wisdom with us tonight, and I hope we can stay in touch. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation and the opportunity to share with you and your audience today. So thank you so much, Kim.
Me too. Okay, everybody, good night. God bless. This is Alan Kitto on the way out, and I think you'll like the song and get the irony. Good night.
You ready to go?
Good night.
Come on, Wigwag. Let's go, boy.
Used to have a family, paid union dues, work construction crew. When I lost my tools, then the whistle blew. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. Leave my home and family was on the lonely road. Signs kept telling me far away place to go. Winds changed my destiny, how was I to know? Can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I followed the yellow brick road to the end of a rainbow. A woman standing there living on the dole. She looked away and said, this road has a heavy toll. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I've been wandering aimlessly in this wilderness. 15 years behind me, supposed to be my best. Need a light to see, guide me to my rest. I can't say I'm staying, I'm only passing through. La la la, la 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 la, I'm only passing through. I'm only